This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition and their new centerfire rifle ammunition, Terminal Ascent. Now, the Terminal Ascent has a slipstream polymer tip that helps flatten trajectories and initiates low-velocity expansion at longer ranges. The Terminal Ascent gives you match-grade long-range accuracy in a bonded hunting bullet, and it comes in a variety of cartridges, including the 6.5 Creedmoor, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 28 Nosler, the 7mm Remington Mag 30-06, and the 300 Win Mag. If you want to find more information about the Terminal Ascent, visit federalpremium.com, and while you're there, check out It's Federal Season, the official podcast of Federal Ammunition. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Iowa Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and I don't know about you, but I kind of wish spring would hurry up and get here. If I had my opportunity, I would take my bow, I would drive up to Pennsylvania, and I would shoot that groundhog who said there was going to be 6 more weeks of winter. And I don't know if you're listening to this on the Friday that this episode is actually released, Iowa got hit with another slammer snowstorm, and we got, I don't even know, 6 more inches of snow on top of the 14 inches that we already had over the last 3 weeks. So I'm sick of scooping my driveway. I'm sick of getting water tracked in the house from the kids, and you know how it is. Iowa winter, but I'm complaining about things that happen every year, so that's not going to change. But we have a really good episode today. And I'm on the phone today with Ryan Graydon, and Ryan and I kind of have a little discussion about things that we can be doing right now that are going to improve our odds in the deer woods for this upcoming 2021 season. We talk about scouting, we talk about trail cameras, we talk about gear, we talk about shooting our bows, a whole bunch of different things. It's kind of a really quick in-your-face episode, to the point. Hopefully you can listen to this on your way to work or while you're on the treadmill or cooking supper or whatever, but it's about 30 minutes, so hopefully you guys enjoy it. Right? Because I don't know about you, but the second that the hunting season is over, there's like a 2-week period where I don't do much thinking about it. And then it's right back in to thinking about strategy and tactics and things that I can be doing to improve my odds for the next season. So Before we get into the episode, though, we got to do a quick commercial from our partners at Quiet Cat. Have you ever considered using an electric bicycle to get deeper into the backcountry? Well, Quiet Cat is the leader in off-road electric mountain bikes and will guarantee greater accessibility to areas that are impossible or extremely difficult to access. Compatible with an assortment of accessories, Quiet Cat is here to outfit your next adventure. Haul more gear in and haul your game out with Quiet Cat. Go check out their full lineup of e-bikes at www.quietcat.com. All right, let's get into today's episode with Ryan Graydon. All right, on the phone with me today, Mr. Ryan Graydon. Ryan, how we doing, man?
Good, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So you're going to have to remind me, what part of the state do you live in?
Well, you know, hunters never give away their spots, but yeah, I actually live right in the center of the state, just outside of a little town called Dayton, Iowa.
Gotcha. Did you get hit with all this snow?
Where I work. What's that?
Did you get hit with all this snow today?
Oh, we are digging out. Yes, yeah. It's quite deep. So
yeah, man, I tell you what, yesterday I went out into the timber. I had one trail camera left that I, you know, said to myself, I better get this thing out. I haven't checked it since late October. So I went in there thinking, hey, it would just be an easy walk, but I was high kneeing it all the way to the trail camera. And man, it just makes me it makes me feel sorry for the deer right now who are out there just trying to survive.
Oh my goodness. They are tough animals, you know?
Yeah.
And I've often wondered that same thing. How do they do it? But that's what makes them so incredible. So,
yeah. I don't know. Do you guys have a lot on the ground right now?
We do. Yeah. I mean, I would say between the snow we got last week and this week, we probably have 10 or 12 inches, where we live. So
yeah, same here, man. It's mm-hmm. just like they can't take advantage of that egg, especially with that the ice. So, you know, it's like a layer of snow,
right,
a layer of ice, and then another layer of snow, and obviously more snow and ice today, depending on where you're at in Iowa. And they just don't dig through that like they can if it's just a couple inches.
Right. Yep. And you'll notice that it really changes when you're out in the timber and you can see where they're finding food. It's different and it makes it tough. So
yeah, just out of curiosity, do you ever like supplemental feed? Like, do you ever throw corn out for them this time of year just to, I don't know, help them out in some way, shape or form?
I do. Yeah. You know, and I've met guys that kind of go back and forth on that, but for me and doing that, I think it's, you know, it's just me as a hunter, I want to care for the herd. And especially now, just as you said, you got a layer of ice in between those snows and it's getting tougher and tougher for those deer to find food. And if I want a healthy herd to hunt next fall, absolutely. We usually throw out some apple corn. We just buy at Walmart just to give them something. And to tell you the truth, Dan, it also gives us an opportunity, you know, to see who's made it through the season and who's doing well and who's still around. Cause we put the trail cameras out and, you know, when you've got a good source like that, in conditions like we have now, you're attracting a lot of deer.
Oh yeah.
And so it makes it nice to kind of make a list of who's still around. So
yeah, that's a fact. And I tell you, that's a perfect transition leading into what we're going to talk about today. And that mm-hmm. is what we can be doing now to help better mm-hmm. our odds for the 2021 deer hunting season. And you wrote an article that's in the Iowa Sportsman magazine, and we're going to kind of cover all those points. I'll throw in a couple points and we'll just kind of shoot from the hip on this one. But I think I'll let you start. Is there mm-hmm. one thing? Is there one thing that is above all, would you say, is probably one of the most important things people should do this time of year to help better their odds for next season?
Boy, I tell you, if I could just kind of dumb it down to one sentence, you gotta get out in the timber.
Yeah.
And mainly what I'm looking for this time of year is trails and travel patterns.
Absolutely.
You know, cause, what I've found is at this time of the year, those deer are using the most trusted and best used trails. And those are trails that, you know, in the timber that I hunt, you know, I've been around hunting this timber since I was a kid with my dad and my uncles and my grandfather. And those are still the same trails. You're talking the last 35 years. Yeah. Those are still the same trails that those deer have used. And so I want to get out there and see, okay, are they still using those same trails? Or, you know, and I even get down and, you know, I've got four daughters. And so now we've got the whole Graydon clan out kind of studying the herd and their movement, and you're finding those trails, but okay, which direction are the tracks leading? Are they coming out to food sources? Are they going in? You know, and so then we make mental notes. Well, this must be, you know, more of a bedding trail. They're going back into bedding areas, so we might hunt those more in the mornings. But you're just kind of stacking notes for your fall and your yeah. late summer, and trying to put yourself in a position where, you know, you've done your homework, you know where they're the trails are using, and then you can take advantage of that. So
I'll tell you right now, I think the fact that people just put their gear away and they don't think about it until velvet time is a huge opportunity loss for a lot of hunters. It's awesome to hear you say that, because one thing, a lot of people are like, well, just because there's deer tracks here now doesn't mean that they're going to be here in the fall. That's, you know, one could argue that, but what I will say
right.
is the trails, how deer move through terrain, can tell you a lot about deer movement in general. And then through other scouting throughout the year, historical information through trail cameras, and let's just say in season hunting, knowing where vegetation is, those trails are like a map of deer movement. Mm-hmm. And if you can find, once the vegetation grows back in and it's coming up on October, and you find that edge, or you find a scrape or a rub, and then also knowing where those trails are and how they use terrain can help you almost pinpoint where to put stands come fall.
Absolutely. I totally agree. You know, and that really, we took advantage of that big time this year. I have four daughters, like I mentioned. The oldest one's 18, the youngest one is 10. And, you know, between all four of them in the last 10 years, they've harvested over 25 deer, 26 deer.
Nice.
But this year alone, the two that are still young enough for the youth hunt, you know, we knew there was a food source, an alfalfa field that they were using because of our late August scouting and just binoculars and scopes and stuff. And then, you know, this major trail that's been used for years, we started setting up cameras on that. And I'll tell you, Dan, it didn't take us long to fill two tags with two tremendous bucks. And yeah. these two little girls just made an incredible harvest, perfect shots. And, you know, as a dad, they're passing that information down, and man, it's just, they're seeing the benefit of that knowledge.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, they're getting out there in the spring. They're excited about it right now. You know, my 10-year-old is, Dad, when are we going to get out? When are we going to go out? I'm going, well, you know, Dad has work and stuff, but she's pumped about it.
Well, it's cool. It's cool to see her being as excited as you are. You know, that pesky work kind of gets in the way for a lot of things.
It sure does. Man. Sure does. Yeah.
So yeah, scouting, I guess, other than trails in the snow, right? I mean, and the snow just lays it all out there for you. Is there anything else that a guy should be looking for while he's out there doing this postseason scouting?
Yeah. So our postseason scouting, you know, like I said, starts with those trails and those travel patterns, but then, you know, there's a couple other things that we are also kind of keeping an eye out for. And that, as we kind of go through the woods, number one, we're looking for sheds. You know, we'll start actually this cold snap that we're going to have. I believe that's going to start dropping sheds. You know, and so there's a couple of big bucks that, you know, we patterned late summer that we didn't see much through the season. And so I'm kind of eager to get in the woods and see if we can find sheds, knowing that they made it through. So that's one thing. But the other thing that we are looking for too is bedding areas.
Yeah.
You know, those melted oval shapes in the snow that you don't get to see very often without it. You know, you might yeah. come across in fall timber an area where the leaves are matted down and you can tell something's laid there. But I tell you what, when you're walking through the timber and the snow and you can look off 100 yards away and see eight of those melted oval patterns, well, then you start looking at that that terrain and go, wow, yeah, this is a real brushy area, or there's some tipped over trees, you know, kind of hinge cut trees. Not that we cut them, but that's what they are. And, you know, those bedding areas are another key thing that we're kind of putting into our prep for, you know, the fall. We know that that's where they like to sleep. That's where they feel safe. That's where they feel protected. That's where they feel in the sun and keep them warm. So knowing that, well, again, you put that in with, well, where's the major trail there? Where's the food source? And then just begin to place your stands. And so that's one of the other things we're looking forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on how cold it is, one thing I guess I'll add is knowing, you know, and this is some of the terrain that I hunt. You know, you have these big long ridges that kind of file down or funnel down into some kind of creek system, and on the tips of those is where I tend to find most of those beds, or in these thick bedding areas. And it will also kind of allow you to say, okay, they're bedding here on this particular wind, and
right,
and I know that may not be the case 100% this time of year, because thermal cover is very important. But one thing that I've always liked, you know, just like the trails that we talked to in the snow, when you can see their bedding, I mark those down on my Onyx or on my mapping, yep, on my phone. And I say, okay, I need to get a stand. Let's just say it's an east facing slope. I need to get here on a west wind somehow. And, you know, late October, when these bucks start to, you know, when they're starting to cruise these downwinds of these bedding areas, and maybe that's where I need to have a tree stand.
Exactly. Yep. And that's, you know, that's where we kind of focus a lot of that pre-rut and early rut setups is, you know, downwind of those bedding areas, because, you know, years of showing both, you know, just, tracks as well as visually seeing it happen, you know, probably much like you, where you hunt, these terrains and these thermals, these winds will come down these ridges, and those bucks just like to follow the bottom of these ridges, hoping to catch up a scent, you know, and so that's where we place a lot of our stands. But again, if you don't know where those bedding areas are, you don't know where to put your stand. You don't know where to intercept those bucks. So
yeah, absolutely. All right. So, you know, we could wrap that almost all into scouting, right? We're looking for sign, fresh sign. We're looking for maybe some rubs and some scrapes, you know, that are left behind from the previous season. You know, obviously the trails. Outside of the scouting type of deal, what else can a guy be doing to really focus on next year?
Well, there's a lot of things that you could be doing to kind of get prepared for the next year. You know, one of the things that we start kind of late spring or early summer is obviously thinking about food plots, thinking about what we should be planting. And Dan, I'm a penny pincher kind of guy, you know. So
you got four daughters. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when I moved into the community that we live in now, I made some friends with some farmers, and these are guys that have become pretty close friends, and they know I love hunting. But what I started doing with them is, you know, anytime they need help around the farm or an extra hand, I volunteer.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that might be driving grain cart in the fall when they're picking, you know, on a day that somebody can't make it, or, you know, just helping them clean up around a farm. And come springtime, when these guys get done planting, they call me when they've got extra seed. And so I oftentimes will end up with three or four bags full of corn, and same with soybeans, that I can just go out and plant. Now, granted, it's a few weeks later than you know, a normal farmer would plant them, but that food plot still comes up, and all I have is my own sweat and equity into it. I don't have to spend a dime for it.
Yeah.
So getting out there, yeah, planting those food plots, you know, that not only gives you an advantage come fall, to hunt over, but it also is taking care of your herd. It's giving them a really good, healthy diet through the summer. That's going to increase their weight, also their antler growth, and that's always a good thing come fall when you're trying to make a harvest. So
yeah, that's a fact, and that's one thing that I'll be honest with you. In the past, I didn't used to do so much. I do a lot more of that these days, and that's especially guys who have knock-on door permission, right? They're not leasing it. It's not their own property, but if it's just a knock on a door, it's a family friend. If it's someone who's just giving you permission to hunt their farm, I feel like people don't take that very seriously. To me, I just took it for granted. I used to be like, hey, I'll hunt whenever I want. I'll come out. But, nowadays, man, I've installed satellite dishes. I've fixed fence. I've chased cattle back into their pastures and whatnot. And I help them out any chance that I get, because I know that they don't have to let me hunt on that farm. So anything that I can do during the off season to, you know, help them out is just going to solidify our relationship to let them, you know, like say, oh, this guy's a good guy. He can definitely keep hunting here.
Right. Exactly. Yep. You know, you just said something else and establishes a friendship. And
yeah,
you know, I'm so happy to say a few of those guys, you know, that I've become friends with who never grew up hunting, have started to hunt, and it's become something that's special between them and their boys now, you know? So, being able to kind of get them going in this new, sport, and they're having success, and they're sharing stories, making memories, man, that to me, you know, just as a guy who loves hunting and had that experience with generations of my own family, getting an opportunity to help somebody start that within their family is pretty fun. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, it's just getting more people into the sport. That's a good sport to be a part of these days. So,
yeah. And just almost as like a part B of that is this time of year. I'm a penny pincher just like you. I can't afford to buy my own land quite yet. I don't want to lease yet. I'd rather save my money for like a Western trip. But right. This time of year, probably not when it's this kind of weather outside, you know, blowing snow, real, real nasty out, but I will start the process of looking at farms that I would like to hunt, finding where the landowner lives, and knocking on doors and seeing if I can't shed hunt it, which may lead to turkey hunting, which may lead to eventually deer hunting. So, you know, if I feel that as a hunter, you know, you can lose your farm and like that, especially if it's just permission. So always having another property in your back pocket could save a season, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And this is the time to be watching. You know, one of the things that we do as we're driving in the evenings now is counting deer. You know, my daughters love to count deer, you know, so we're just cruising. And when you start to see deer popping out every evening on a certain property, that's one of those properties that you kind of make a mental note of, you know, and you try to get to know those people. And, you know, and then a lot of times nobody's ever asked them, surprisingly, you know, you just, nobody's ever asked, yeah, you bet, you can go ahead and hunt it. And go, wow, incredible. Thank you. So, it pays to be a little bit social as a hunter and be friendly and the benefits, you can reap them. So
what's next on the list?
Well, I think another thing, you know, that we do through the summer, as a family, and again, I think I share a lot about my daughters, but that is kind of my hunting world now is my dad, me and my daughters. It's kind of our family, but in the summer we do a lot of, just getting together, and we might do some shooting, you know, just practice sharpening our skills. The girls hunt with a muzzle loader. And so getting out and doing some target practice, really concentrating on squeezing that trigger, finding the right spot. We look at deer pictures, and, you know, if the deer is standing at this angle, is it an ethical shot, or should you wait? You know, what if this is the only angle you have? Where would you be aiming? You know, so we just discuss a lot about that through the summer months. And we also, you know, one of the things that I love doing, I think it's just really neat, is you know, we like to take a lot of hikes in the timber that we hunt, and we're counting fawns. You know, looking for those little ones that are out and about. And a lot of times we find them hiding, you know, so it's kind of a neat thing to do. But, you know, just seeing how healthy things are, you know, when your does are dropping twins and triplets in the area, you know that something's going right. And they're a very healthy herd, and that's just increasing your population, you know, in years to come, and that's a good thing all around. So that's one of the summer things that we do. Not to mention the scouting, the evening scouting. You know, we get out. The girls love getting on top of Dad's truck, you know, because that's just fun. But we'll get the tripod out, we get the binoculars out, we get the camera out, and just start filming those deer and seeing them come out with bright orange coats and getting excited. And, you know, it's just a fun pastime to do during the summer, but it's productive. You know, yeah. It's got a purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let me ask you this. I am the guy that I'm asking you if you are. So if that makes sense. So here's what I'm not, man, and I feel horrible saying this because I want to do better at this. Once the season is over, I spent so much time, you know, I went to South Dakota twice this year. I went to Michigan this year. I went to, and then obviously like a week or two in the rut where I'm gone. Right. So once I get home, I kind of just dump everything out and I put it all away and I don't shoot my bow anymore until it starts to get a little warmer out. Do you shoot your bow all year round?
I try to.
Yeah,
I really do. You know, shooting my bow to me, I've, you know, you just, there's a benefit of obviously honing your skills, but for me, it's a bit of a escape, you know, just a kind of a relaxing moment, you know. So, and fortunately, you know, I'm probably luckier than the average guy, but I, you know, I live at a place where we have some barns and some open machine sheds that kind of allow me a little bit of indoor space. So even in elements like this, if I really wanted to, I could get out, get that bow working. And I'll tell you too, the benefit of kind of practicing some shooting in colder weather is, you know, shooting a bow in colder weather is a little bit tougher. You're drawing back and holding it, just, you know, there's just physics of that bow in colder weather that make it a little more difficult. And so having that practice and creating that muscle memory of shooting your bow in colder weather will help you if you're in the hunting later on into the rut or even into the winter months with your bow, you know. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I could say I do a more summer shooting than I do in the winter and the spring. But if I can get out and if I find a time where I'm, you know, I have nothing that I'm committed to, you bet I'm going to shoot if I can. So
yeah, man, that's something I really need to work on. I don't want to say I'm getting worse at it, but I need to. I just got off the phone, I'll be honest with you, with a guy who is a really good deer hunter. But he's a really good deer hunter, partly because he's a really good archer, and he shoots all year round. And I feel like if I want to become better at killing deer, one of the things that I need to be better at is shooting my bow and accuracy and all that. Just becoming one with my weapon. And I think this year, as a matter of fact, even though I can't shoot tonight, I may just go get my bow and draw it back like 10 times, right? And just hold it, you know, hold my pin on an exposed screw in my garage and just hold it there and then go back and then do it again. Right. And it's something, right?
Yep. And that, you know, I'll tell you, I was inspired years ago. I'm fortunate enough to just meet some of those guys in the industry. And John Dudley is one of those guys that I met 10 or 12 years ago, who's an incredible, you know, archer hunter,
right?
Lives now down in southern Iowa, but he was hunting a property that I was hunting at the same time. And I remember one night he killed a buck, and I was able to kind of help him with that and ask him the details of that. And, you know, John shot Olympic teams and stuff like that. And I found out that, you know, that buck was standing at like 50 or 60 yards, and he drilled that thing and it just dropped. you know, but he intentionally shot it that way. He wanted to hit it on the mark, so it was getting dark. He didn't want to trail it. And I just remember going, man, that's the type of archer that I'd like to strive to be, you know. And that was the shot for him that was nothing, you know. But most average archers are even, you know, 30, maybe 40 max. But when you get the practice in and do and get your body used to it, you know, an archer can be accurate, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards if he knows what he's doing, you know. So it takes practice.
Yep.
So.
And I'm not going to be taking shots like that when I'm only picking my bow up in June, you know what I mean, or late May. So I've always wanted to kill a turkey with a bow. And I'm never prepared by the time turkey season gets around. So I need to start right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it. And I think that's wise. And turkey season is great practice. You know, you know that's, you know, we're just a few months away from that opening day. So getting out and sitting and shooting your bow, you know, that's really important. So,
yeah. All right. Anything else?
Well, I just think a good reminder to all the folks out there listening, you know, this deer season can be more than just a few months that you hunt. It can be a year-round sport, and I would encourage you. There's, you know, it's not wasted time getting out the timber and getting out in creation and enjoying it and doing a little preparations for the following season, you know. And so I would encourage you guys, make it a family event. That's what it is for us, you know, getting out with grandpa and dad and girls, you know, and we enjoy it and we benefit from it. And you know, this year we harvested as a family, all three generations, we harvested 7 deer, you know. And I took 2 tremendous bucks, one with my bow, one with my muzzleloader, and all my girls filled their tags and grandpa filled their tags. So you know, we've figured out the equation, and the equation starts now, you know, and that's what I would encourage you to do. So.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. There's a lot of emphasis in the hunting community and the hunting industry about retention and getting new hunters or, you know, maybe hunters that have given it up to get back into the sport. And I know that you have your hands full with your 3 daughter or your 4 daughters, but has there ever been any interest by some of your daughter's friends to get involved with hunting?
Absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, my oldest daughter, just a few years ago, she said, you know, Dad, we were actually sitting in a deer stand, and she said, you know, Dad, if it's all right with you when I'm old enough, could I start taking like younger girls out and teaching them hunting? She goes, I like hunting with you. I want to spend time with you. But, you know, is that okay? And I said, baby, if that's what your heart desires, do it. You know, that is just incredible to see that, you know, the passion that she has, spending time outdoors with her dad is now something that she wants to pass on to people around her, you know? And so, yeah, they have asked, and I'm sure that will happen. It hasn't happened yet, but it's more or less kind of convincing these families that have never been hunting before, you know, why is it okay? Why would you want to do that for my daughter? You know, I hope it does. I think it'd be fun. I think the girls would enjoy it. And I think bringing these young ones into a sport that hasn't been a part of their upbringing just might trigger something that would continue for generations in their family. And that's really the hope of it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And I, again, I know you're busy with your family, but do you take any trips outside of the state to go hunt?
Yes. You know, that's one of the things that I have my dad and uncle, and then I've got a brother-in-law and a cousin. So there's these 5 men in my family that are all very much outdoorsmen. And so we have, for probably about the last 15 years, any chance that we get, we'd like to go out to Wyoming and do a antelope hunt. So lately that's been, our draw has been about every 3 years for the unit we hunt there. My dad and I, We just a year ago went out and did a cow elk hunt in southeastern Wyoming, which was a blast. It was just kind of having fun with that. We've dad and I also go to Nebraska for turkey hunting and trout fishing in the early spring. And we've done a few feral hog hunts down in Oklahoma and areas like that. So, yeah, we try to get out of the state and experience some different terrain. And again, for us, it's a family thing. We turn it into kind of a reunion of sorts. And we have fun doing it and create a lot of memories, take a lot of pictures. But thankfully, too, we've had success, you know, and that's just the draw to keep going. And I would encourage, you know, but we're DIYers. You know, we like to do it ourselves.
Yep.
So it takes one of us doing the research and then kind of presenting it to all the guys in our family. And everybody's going, all right, let's put it on the calendar and let's make a go of it. So,
yeah.
We're hoping to get out this fall. We'll put it for our draw. I think we got enough points and we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been planning. I got 6 years. This will be year number 7 of preference points for Wyoming. Nice. So I applied for Wyoming elk archery tag this year. So we'll see what happens, man. I think I'll find out in May if I draw or not.
Fantastic. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. And kind of in the spirit of this podcast and the topics that we've been discussing, if you ever want to go hunt or have any interest in hunting outside of your home state, now's the time to do that research, because there are plenty of opportunities out there for deer hunting in other states where all you have to do is have your gear and show up and buy a tag at Walmart and they'll let you hunt.
That's true. Very true. Yep.
So, well, I tell you what, this is a short and sweet podcast, Ryan. Man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on the phone with me and chat about these things. So thanks for your time and good luck this upcoming season.
All right. Thanks, Dan. It's been my pleasure. And yep, we'll talk to you soon.
Have you ever considered using an electric bike to get deeper into the backcountry? Quiet Cat is the leader in off-road electric mountain bikes and will guarantee greater accessibility to areas that are impossible or extremely difficult to access. Compatible with an assortment of accessories, Quiet Cat is here to outfit your next adventure. Haul more gear in and haul your game out with Quiet Cat. Check them out at www.quietcat.com. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.